thought you said she was dead.
That was her sister, the Wicked Witch of the East. This is the Wicked Witch of the West. She's worse than the other one was.
Who killed my sister? Who killed the Witch of the East? Was it you?
No. No, it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill anybody.
Well, my little pretty, I can cause accidents, too.
Aren't you forgetting the ruby slippers?
The slippers? Yes. The slippers. They're gone. The ruby slippers. What have you done with them? Give them back to me or I'll...
It's too late. There they are, and there they'll stay.
Give me back my slippers. I'm the only one that knows how to use them. They're no use to you. Give them back to me. Give them back.
Keep tight inside of them. Their magic must be very powerful, or she wouldn't want them so badly.
You stay out of this, Glinda, or I'll fix you as well.
Oh, rubbish. You have no power here. Be gone before somebody drops a house on you, too.
Very well. I'll bide my time. And as for you, my fine lady, it's true, I can't attend you here and now as I'd like. But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Okay, that you aren't listening to The Wizard of Oz. You're listening to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk, streaming live this morning. I just love The Wizard of Oz. Got a chance to watch it every year when it came out. And why is it that it's so iconic that a movie made in 1939 is still as applicable today as it ever was back then? And I think it's because it really points out human nature pretty explicitly, and they do a good job of pointing out the flaws in human nature. And that's what Solomon does in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. He's pointing out the flaws in human nature in the Proverbs and giving us direction on how to address those issues. And the Wicked Witch of the West, if you ever watched The Wizard of Oz, and if you didn't, I'm not sure what planet you're from, but didn't everybody watch it? The Wicked Witch of the West, she was really the antagonist throughout the movie, and one of the things about her is that she was green in the movie. And I think the reason she was is because she was kind of identified as being green with envy. And all she cared about were those ruby slippers and the fact that once she had them, it was going to increase her power. And that really was her whole belief, that she had to get those. It was all about envy, something that somebody else had that she didn't have, and she wanted it. There was the old belief from a medical perspective was that envy and jealousy were traced to the liver, which secretes a greenish bile, which is why you get this statement of green with envy, is that they believed that that was kind of what would cause people to have this secretion. A problem in the liver was traced to the fact that they were envious. So how does this all line up with the wisdom of Solomon? Well, Solomon says in Proverbs 14:30, that a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. And I think that's what you see here in the Wicked Witch of the West, when she's constantly concerned about one and only one thing, and that's those ruby slippers. She's going to destroy anybody that gets in her way in order to obtain that power from those slippers. But at the same time, she's to the point where she ends up destroying herself in trying to accomplish that. And that really is, I think, what envy amounts to. It isn't used the same way today as what it really means, but it's different than jealousy. You know, envy is one of those things that you really can't placate in any way. Jealousy is more a sin of covetousness, where you have what some, or you want what somebody else has, and you intend to take it from them. But envy is a lot a lot more insidious. You have what I want. I can't get it. And I resent the fact that you have it, and I'd rather see everything destroyed so that nobody can have it. And because of that, it's hard to placate somebody. You can't buy them off, and you can't resolve the problem when there is no logic associated with their approach to being willing to destroy everything and anything around them, including themselves, to obtain it. So we're going to get into a discussion today, the destructiveness of envy. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back with more of Solenron Blast.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
The last to go will see the first three go before her. And her mangy little dog, too. How about a little fire, Scarecrow?
Oh, no! No! No!
More of the Wizard of Oz. And so the Wicked Witch of the West gets destroyed just by simply throwing water
on her. I would have liked to have seen the Democratic debate end like that, actually. That's my fantasy.
But, and so when you consider what Solomon says, that wickedness or the envy is rottenness, rotten to the bone, that rots your bones, I think that's kind of the impression that you're left with the Wicked Witch of the West. Here she is. Nothing, all it takes is water thrown on her just to melt her away. She's got no bone structure underneath there. There's nothing to support her. And just simply throwing water on her was enough to get rid of her. And I think that's kind of what you end up with in a long term when it comes to envy in your life. There's nothing more destructive to yourself or others than that human emotion of envy, and you have to ask, why would anyone want to destroy themselves or something useful, beneficial, even valuable just because they can't have it or don't have it?
And that's what makes it so insidious as a political device. When you start pushing envy, I mean, really, where's this going to go? What's going to eventually happen? What's the end game here? It can't be good. When you use this to promote your cause and purpose, you know, you're thinking, like Solomon points out, it is rottenness. And it's not only rottenness to the human body, it's rottenness to the body politic. It cannot come out good.
Right. Our whole social structure, if you believe in a culture of envy, you've got to consider that rottenness goes into the structure of society as well as individuals, and there is no society that feeds off of envy that will ultimately succeed. It ultimately destroys itself, just as people ultimately destroy themselves when it comes to having envy in their as their basis approaching life.
Yeah, it doesn't build the middle. It divides. It pushes people to the extremes. For example, you know, third world countries. There's a lot of third world countries that are beautiful. I've had an opportunity to be in Mexico City a few times in the last couple years. I tell you, some of the best steak I ever had in my life is in Mexico City, and I say that every time I go. I'm not just saying that. I've been to Argentina and some these other places. There are some elements there that are absolutely fantastic, off the charts fantastic. Definitely, in so many ways, in my opinion anyway, it's a lot more charming than just, you know, American culture is great, but in some ways we can be pretty generic too. You know what I mean? We have all these chain restaurants, and the same streets can look identical no matter what city you happen to be in.
Right.
And they all look exactly alike, with a mall and a Jack in the Box and everything else. So there's some super charming elements to these places. But one thing you see the wealthy and you see the poor. And there's like this massive gulf, very little middle class in the middle, keeping those nations together. And every once in a while, you know, Mexico makes a little move and things get better. But my point is that envy is, you introduce it into the mindset of people, and it does not produce this beautiful sharing, mutually prosperous society.
Right. It is a destructive element in individuals' minds and in society itself.
Yeah, people qualify, you know, getting back to third world analogy. Okay, what do you want to do? Work a regular job or go work for a cartel where, you know, you're talking about a cop.
Uh-huh.
Where you're going to make, you know, exponentially more money, you know? I mean, it's a real tough place to be, and it's all I got to have what the rich people have kind of thing.
Yeah, and a lot of times you see it disguised as kind of a righteous indignation against some iniquity that exists out there, and that iniquity is most often, like you say, greed of what other people have, and not only envy but jealousy along with it. But I think envy is a lot more destructive than jealousy. Jealousy is just, hey, I want that too, which can have a tendency to cause you to take the effort to achieve it on your own. You may have a little bit of jealousy and think, well, okay, I can achieve that also. But envy, just, it doesn't take that approach. The approach is, I'm going to destroy what you have because I don't have it. And I think that's you're supposedly seeking fairness when you're doing that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you can't have it as well as I. That makes everything fair. But thinking that kind of a thought process, you know, that, hey, nobody wins in that case. You've destroyed the economic aspect of things.
It,
and
it leads to a very destructive thinking pattern. You know,
right.
It's not just a feeling or an emotion. It's a way of thinking. And you start seeing things in a certain way, and that's why, everything you now understand and perceive is from this prism. That life is not fair, and that you've been shortchanged, and somehow the system needs to be brought down in order for you to, you know, have a fair shake at life. And again, it rottenness to the bones. I mean, it rots the inside, rots you from the inside out. And to justify this, I mean, what we're talking about this morning is a fundamental truth, probably in every serious-minded view of God or religion on earth, right? Don't envy.
Right.
But somehow today in America and in the culture we live in, it's somehow been given a positive spin, you know, that this is really going to motivate you. It's going to motivate you to go out and do something good for society as if, you know, it's even possible. It doesn't at all. It's not a good thing.
It's a victimhood approach to things, which we see happening all over the place. You blame somebody else, and that's easier than dealing with your own bad choices, your own mistakes that you make, and blaming the other person because his success was at your expense. And that's kind of, to me, that's kind of what you see when they want to raise the minimum wage, right? It's blaming somebody else because that person's success in building a business, taking all the risks associated with building that business, is at your expense as somebody that only is getting paid minimum wage, whatever that minimum wage.
You know, there's a lot of generous people who want to be generous. America is a very generous country.
The most generous in the world, actually.
But one of the things you have to learn how to do after a while is you have to tell the difference between a real victim and a posturing victim. I mean, and that's a hard lesson to learn.
Right.
I remember as a kid, I was a kid. I had some extra tickets for a U of A basketball game. I was a ball boy, so we got to go in, and I don't know how I ended up with these tickets, and I saw this guy out there looking down on his luck, kind of, and I thought to myself, man, I didn't use the word bless in my head in those days, but I said, I'm going to help this guy. I'm going to bless this guy. And I'm just going to give him these tickets. And I saw him just kind of hanging around. I asked him, you got tickets? He said, no. And I said, go ahead, man. Here, you can have these two tickets. And I felt good about myself. Mm-hmm. But because I was kind of working there, I came outside during halftime to do something. And I saw that, I saw this guy selling those tickets to somebody else. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah.
And you realize something that some people can posture this and look really good at it. Uh-huh. And other people really have a need. And some people, you know, it's a game. And you learn you have to learn this, because if you don't, you know what happens? You become really cynical.
Right.
And you don't believe in anybody. And the fact is, there are victims, and we're supposed to be generous to victims, right?
Right. And the other side of it is the peace that you have when you're not envious, you know. Solomon points that out. And so when you're in that mode where everything is somebody else's fault and you have no supposed control over that, it takes away any chance of being able to have a happy life, being able to fulfill yourself in a reasonable manner. And because you're never going to be grateful about what you do have, you're always going to be looking at somebody else's, what they have, and the fact that you don't have it, and looking to destroy what they've done.
Not only that, people are all different, they have personalities, but it makes some people very dangerous, too. You know, there's something I've learned to recognize over the years when I hear somebody posturing themselves as a victim and they want to tell you how much they've been victimized. Some people, you have to learn how to read that, and what they're telling you is, what I'm about to do to you is nothing compared to what other people have done to me. And they're sending they're sending you a little message, and you got to watch out when people start posturing, giving you the victim talk, because they can become, and again, not everybody's the same in temperament, but I'll tell you, there's some people that are extremely dangerous. You know what we call those people? Sociopathic.
Right.
And they become dangerous. They get into a situation, and because of the way they view themselves, and they feel, I can take. I've been taken from, therefore I will take. Mm-hmm. I've been abused, therefore I will abuse. And it's nothing compared to what I've had to put up with. And when people think like that, they're, like I said, they can be very dangerous. Their bones are rotten. That's what I'm saying. You pick it up. Their bones have rotted.
And you kind of see that with this little episode in The Wizard of Oz. You know, the Wicked Witch of the West isn't greedy for the money and everything else that could possibly be there. She's looking for the power that comes from these ruby slippers. And that she's going to get that power, or try and get it, at the expense of everybody around her. Here's Dorothy, just pops in out of nowhere, and suddenly she's arch enemy of everything that the Wicked Witch of the West stands for. So there's a big difference just between just being greedy for something and having the power. You know, you can be greedy and want to spend your own money or earn money. There's a difference when you're looking to get the power to tell everybody else how they should or shouldn't spend their money.
Well, I'll tell you that the Green Witch, you know, that was a costume design decision for the ages, that they made her green, you know. Every struck terror in every little kid for a generation at least.
More than that. If you
consider, because it was on TV when
this movie was created in 1939. So when you start thinking about how long has it been out there, this is an old movie. 70 almost 80 years this movie has been out there, every year typically. And so generation to generation. And the thing is, it was based all on the book by L. Frank Baum, which was written as a children's book, one of the nursery rhyme type books. And, yeah, it was kind of a kid's movie, but it really goes much, much deeper than that. In
well,
terms
it resonates.
Of,
and it created its own kind of envy when they started, when I don't know when they started putting it on TV every year. I think
it was in the probably early 60s. Yeah, it was
and,
late
50s. They, when, you know, that scene where they go from black and white to color. And suddenly, right. I mean, I think that helped Magnavox and Zenith probably more than anything, any advertising campaign they could have waged because, people wanted color TV. Yeah. They wanted to see the transformation, you know?
The interesting thing about the history on that is that the movie really didn't do that well when it came out in 1939 because it was competing against Gone with the Wind at that point in time. And Gone with the Wind, Academy Award-winning movie, you know, a lot of history behind that. But it does. There's something much, much...
Well, that was a precursor to the video market.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it ruled TV, you know.
Right.
When we were little kids.
Yeah, and so in 1939, to overcome not being the top-billed movie, but still continue 77 years later, I don't think I... probably watched Gone with the Wind more than once or twice. You know, and so what was considered to be the top billed movie...
You know, I've still never watched... I've only seen clips of it.
Yeah, I never have
especially
watched...
Especially when you see how long these movies were. They used to have intermissions and stuff. It's like, forget about it, man. Who has that kind of time?
Right. But I think the reality of the behavior, human behavior and everything is really well addressed in The Wizard of Oz, and points out how this all really impacts everybody around him when your whole view on the world is it's me and nobody else, and nobody else can
succeed.
I think
what we're agreeing on, and this is what Solomon is saying, is not a good thing. And this thing will rot you, again, from the inside out. It will do something to you that will not be healthy. And, you know, it's funny. You know, you talk about all these... emotional and psychological challenges people face today, and you know they don't have enough serotonin and this and that. You know, you do have, from a certain perspective, have to stop and ask yourself how much of people's problems are spiritually related. In other words, they're filled with envy, lust, greed, you know, the seven deadly sins.
Right.
And what kind of impact is that having on their psychological well-being? You don't want to ask those questions. You want to tell them your problem is simply chemical, that you need more of this and more of that.
Not the real
problem.
I think
your bones are going to stay rotten if you allow envy to dominate your soul.
Right. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back with more Solomon on Blast, continue this discussion right after this. That's kind of the whole mentality when it comes to envy. I'll get you and everything else around you. And I think that we're seeing that even out there this past week. You know, the craving for this power, the manipulating resentment, everything. That's kind of the structural foundation of typically the political environment, but usually on not so much on the right as it is on the left, but... I'd have to say, in looking at what was going on this past week, that the Republican Party is trying to get that power control, and they're using a lot of envy to do it. I don't know if you heard the comments from Mitt Romney, and then I guess John McCain yesterday kind of made the same comment that they aren't going to support Trump if he is elected or nominated for the Republican candidate for president. And I'd have to say, well, maybe a little bit of envy is showing through, and they're looking a little green around the face like the Wicked Witch of the West here, rather than standing behind what obviously a lot of people in this country want to see happen.
I think there's a lot of people like us that are just not sure what it's going to happen with Donald Trump. You know, you're kind of, he's still curious after all of these months. I'm curious about him. And I'll tell you one thing that really starts polarizing me to take it more seriously is this kind of stuff. Because McCain and Romney, these people have lived and existed in a world of compromise as politicians. You have to. It's part and parcel of what they do, right?
You have to be able to.
Remember McCain, Feingold, you know, and how many conservatives were really angry at him for that piece of legislation, you know, talking about the freedom of speech aspects of fundraising and whatnot. And then there's Romney Care in Massachusetts, where he uses the same advisor that Obama used for Obamacare. And so you kind of realize, okay, you know, what do they say about politics and making legislation is like making sausage? You know, you really don't want to see how it's done.
Right.
You don't mind the finished product sometimes, but you don't really want to watch it being made. So, I think any thinking person understands that reality, and you just hope these guys kind of find their course. But for these guys to simply write Trump off, to me it's not about, conservative principles and values being recognized and honored going forward. It's the fact that these people were losers. And they have been rejected by not just Americans, and more particularly, they've been rejected by the base of the Republican Party.
And that's why I say I think they're looking a little bit green in the face, because both of them ran against Obama and lost. And now it seems like, okay, rather than take the approach that will support who is being nominated,
or just shut up,
yeah,
right?
Or at the very minimum not say anything, they're instead out there taking the approach of the envious person.
And I think they see the party slipping away from their grasp. These people have ruled, they've had a major chunk of power in the United States through the Republican Party, albeit ineffective one, still it's a chunk of power in the United States, deal-making power, and they're about to lose it. And, you know, it's funny. These guys act like they're taking it personally. But, you know, after thinking about it for a second, I thought, wait a minute, it is personal.
It is.
This really is a referendum against Mitt Romney and John McCain. Absolutely it is. They are the face of the people, John Boehner. They are the face of the people being rejected. Absolutely it is against them. So it's you know, when they say throw a rock into a pack of dogs and the one that barks the loudest is the one that got hit. These people got hit.
Yeah.
And yes, that's what Americans are saying. We reject you. We don't think you're strong. We think you're you know.
Well, they got rejected in both elections in 20.
You're hyper-compromised and there's really nothing you can do other than secure your own power base at the end of the day. And you know what? A lot of Republicans are saying, who needs you?
Mm-hmm.
So they should take it personally, because I guess it is very personal against them.
And Solomon also brings out in Proverbs 27, he says, wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? And I think that's kind of what I'm saying here is, can Trump even stand against this kind of envy if the Republican Party as a party is willing to literally, you know, cut off their nose to spite their face, using one of those colloquialisms that is what we're seeing here?
Well, and it also tells you, maybe it's giving us insight into why they were so feckless against Obama's agenda. Maybe that does tell you something about that, in that these people are basically our power base first, the country second.
Right.
And now that their power base is being threatened, they're going to throw the country. They're going to give it the election to Hillary Clinton because their power base is being threatened. It kind of, you know, you say what you want about Donald Trump, but you compare just simply issue for issue, forget all the rhetoric, issue for issue, he is way closer to a conservative agenda than she is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we stupid? We don't know that just because this guy says this and says that and changed his position on abortion. The important thing there is that he did, and he didn't do it last week. I mean, it's been several years since he did. I mean, what do they want from this guy other than probably him to just bow down? And plus, he's been pretty brutal with them.
Yeah. My I guess my comment to those guys would be, hey, maybe they should go back and start watching a few of these old films, I mean, kind of like Wizard of Oz, and maybe some of the old Disney movies, you know, Cinderella, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. There was a lot of envy involved in those people within those stories, and they only ended up destroying themselves in all cases. So maybe those guys need to go back and watch a little bit of the history of movies through the Disney Channel or something and see what they're really doing to potentially the country and themselves in the eyes of the people that are out there. Because that really was the trigger point from my mindset of, wait a minute, these guys just look like envious little children angry at somebody for doing something that they weren't able to accomplish. And so they're going to take it out on them and destroy everything around them in the process.
Well, like that headline I don't have it in front of me, but it's something to the effect that Romney didn't want, or something. Yeah, Romney wanted to be able to tell his grandchildren that he tried to stop Trump. Did you see that headline?
No, I didn't see that one. The one I saw was, "I won't vote for Trump even if he wins the GOP nod." Was the one that.
Well, my question to Romney is: What are you going to tell your grandkids about your inability to stop Obama? I mean, is that really...
Right.
What about that problem
there?
Which
is the worst?
Mitt. So, you know, I mean, then this is the kind of stuff we're seeing where it's happened. This is one of the complaints many people have about the president. He seems to be harder on his domestic challengers, around fellow American domestic challengers, than he is on, you know, international threats. And so now the Republicans are doing the same thing. They're harder on Trump than they are on Obama, and or Hillary. That's astonishing to me.
Bernie. I was thinking of Barry Goldwater.
I don't think anybody's worried about Bernie.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, it's just weekend at Bernie's. I think he's a stiff, and they're just kind of carrying him around.
They're pushing him around. The thing is, they did the same thing to Barry Goldwater a little over 50 years ago. There was somebody that wasn't within the establishment, wasn't part of the real Republican hardcore party. He was an enigma to the Republican Party, and he had a lot of backing. Might even have somebody like Hillary as one of his backers. So here's Barry Goldwater a little over 50 years ago, and what did they end up doing to him? They buried him, and instead of having Barry Goldwater, they ended up with Lyndon Johnson. So,
and I think that was a calculated move, and I think that Lyndon Johnson himself probably sat in back rooms discussing this with some of those Republican leaders at the time. And this was definitely not beyond what these people do. They are politicians, after all. That's what they do. And I think this is what is continuing to make Trump so intriguing to a lot of Americans. Not that Americans are not uncomfortable with some of the way he thinks he says or how he responds. Right. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't like some of his rhetoric.
Yeah.
But you see him as independent of these people.
Yeah.
And we trust these people less.
Right.
That's the problem.
And somebody I heard earlier this week make a comment that Trump is really kind of like the plumber that you absolutely need to have at about, you know, midnight. You don't care what it's going to cost. You just want the plumber in there, fix the problem, and get out. But you don't care if the guy is dirty looking, maybe his pants in the back hang down a little bit too much and are exposing a little bit too much. Maybe he doesn't use the right words that you would appreciate. But he's coming in there, and you got to get that clog undone, right? You need him to do the dirty job and get out. So maybe that's kind of the viewpoint that people have, is that, hey, it doesn't matter in a lot of cases what is real.
Yeah, we don't care about the Check Pants Country Club.
Right.
If they lose their membership, I'm sorry. The last thing on my mind is whether these people lose their lose their status, and their right. families lose their status. And so, you know what? I think they become an obstacle to what's good for the country. And you know what? I have a theory here right now that one way or another, the Republican Party will never be the same. That, not just me. Either the Republican Party will unify around a new way of approaching things, or the Republican Party is going to be absolutely decimated by this. And these guys are—they're done either way. I believe they are finished either way. And people are—they'll be—you know—be a great commercial is Donald Trump with these guys' face, and you know, you're fired because they've been fired. Basically, that's what this means. They have all been fired.
With Mitt and McCain as the top two.
Mitt and McCain, and there needs to be some Democrats in that on that poster as well. But these people have been dismissed, summarily dismissed by the by the Republican base. We don't want you. Well, you've had your chance. You've said what you had to say. You've had power for decades, and this is where you've left us, getting your clock cleaned by Obama.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's cutting off your nose to spite your face, which really is you take some rash single-minded action that ends up hurting your own cause in the end, and that's what we're seeing. And there was a quote I saw from one of the somebody from the middle, probably 1600s. He says, "Our envy always lasts longer than the good fortune of those we envy."
And that's a great line.
It is. It's absolutely what we see in all cases when it comes to envy. Typically, it's going to last a lot longer than all the things you're worried about and are so envious against.
Now let's move to the other side of the aisle, talking about the politics of envy. Everything coming out of Hillary Clinton's mouth right now is to stoke the fires of class envy and social differences. Everything she says is inflammatory.
And Bernie's, in reality, a lot of the same thing, right?
Except nobody pays attention to what he
says. Except nobody. Other than a lot of young people that think that...
I don't even think they're listening. I just think he the concept is what's motivating them.
Okay. They just want the Weekend at Bernie's role.
Yeah, that's a perfect picture. Young people carrying around a stiff till finally it's going to meet his day.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and finish up with Solomon on Blast here this morning, Power Talk 1210. Get the app so you can listen. We'll be right back.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson City streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
You cursed rat! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Oh, what a world, what a world! Who would have thought a good little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness?
So who can destroy that beautiful wickedness? I'm kind of referring maybe to your commentary about Hillary there. We just need to find somebody with that right bucket of water and throw it at Hillary, and maybe she'll melt away.
Going back to the politics of envy, we're discussing this and how she is just shamelessly using this. And it's almost villainous. It's almost like a caricature of a villain.
Right.
You know, this you always see this in various forms of once the they're about to catch up with the villain. Somehow they always end up in the back of a truck with some barrels of crude oil available to them. What do? Start pushing those out of the back of the truck and slicking up the road. And so the pursuit starts sliding all over the place. And it's one of the ways you know you're getting to the end of the story because their time is short and they're getting desperate. And so in a natural sense, I mean, all things being equal, you'd say she must be incredibly desperate right now to be using this kind of rhetoric. But then,
or
there's a side of you where
maybe she doesn't care.
She doesn't care, where she thinks it's all in her favor no matter what she says. And that's dangerous. But one of the things she said, I mean, it really just, it set me off. I mean, like, how could you say this? She's talking about all, according, she's going down her litany of threatened minorities that she has to take care of, that big sister has to watch over.
She'll come in
and save the day.
Right.
And she talks about having the ICE agents come to your house, and you don't have to worry. Like, for one thing, what legal citizen should worry about that?
Nobody,
I don't think, ever.
Obviously.
So she's talking to illegal aliens, pandering to them to vote for her, which is clearly an illegal act.
Right.
Anyway, but then she said that, and then you know what went through my head when I heard her say that was the image of the ICE agents busting into a Miami home to take a 9-year-old by the name of Elian Gonzalez away from his relatives, whose mother died getting him to the country, to take him back because of a deal they made with Fidel Castro back in the 90s. And guess who was president there? Bill Clinton.
Right.
Hillary was very much a part of that. And Janet Reno. And they took this little boy, busted, terrorized this family in the middle of the night.
And it was all over the news media.
All because of a political agreement. Somehow he became a cause célèbre about all this stuff. And they decided that they were going to terrorize this family to make a point. And in any other case, nobody would have cared if a kid stayed in the United States. But because he was a political football, they used all the force of the federal government to terrorize these people. And so here's this woman saying, we won't bust your doors down. She's actually one person who's actually done it,
right,
you know?
Been involved.
Been involved.
Complicit in the crime, basically.
So in the general election, I would take her comment and I'd show those clips. Her comment, those clips. Her comment, those clips.
I think you need
to remind America.
I think you need to be part of Trump's campaign group there to.
Yeah, someone should email that to him.
But if we go back to what we started with regards to Solomon's statement, he says that the heart at peace is what gives life to the body, you know, and the envy is what rots the bones. So my question would be, is there really a cure for envy? If it's really ingrained in you, it's ingrained in our society, is there a cure for it? And I would have to say, well, I don't know. Is there really ever a cure for cancer? Because in my mind, cancer is a good representation of envy. You know, those cancer cells destroy the very life that is supporting them. And so I don't think at this point, if it's really in you, you know, very late stage cancer, there is no cure for it.
I believe there is.
Okay.
And it has to do with thankfulness,
right,
and gratitude.
I think that's maybe more
and
of a vaccine.
Right? I'm saying there are people that are green dying.
Yeah.
And green and melting right now, that if they definitely, those people could be healed if they stopped and said, "You know what? I'm going to start being thankful for what I have and having gratitude toward people that have been good to me, and I'm going to follow that path instead of wait for someone to give me something I think I have coming to me."
Yeah.
In other words, you can change, you can get yourself set free from being an entitled type of thinker to someone who says, "I'm going to be a hard worker." What is America? We're talking about all these two ideas. It's opportunity.
It is the opportunity.
And in order to see opportunity, you have to be thankful for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. You have to have that gratitude.
You have to believe it's actually there. You have to see it, I should just say.
And yeah. I think we've seen that from the aspect of Ben Carson in his life, that there is that gratitude for what he's been able to accomplish and continue to return that. And so, yeah, I think you're right. There is a cure for it. It's just you've got to be able to be willing to take in the medicine, which is get rid of the envy and instead replace it with gratitude towards what you have. And I think from the aspect of any person's life, whether they're, you know, somebody like the Wicked Witch of from the Wizard of Oz, or even somebody like John McCain, who's been able to be in his position for a long time, have gratitude for that you got as far as you did, rather than tearing down and being envious of those that are trying to do what you've done in the past yourself.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite proverbs, I don't know where it comes from, but I've heard it quite a bit, you know, living well is the best revenge. You know, that's not speaking of having the best in life. It's saying taking your circumstances and embracing them.
Being satisfied with them.
And enjoying them. I mean, that's the best way anybody, that's exactly what Solomon was saying in chapter 9, Ecclesiastes chapter 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take your food, your family, your clothes, clean clothes, you know, and accept it for what it is and enjoy it. And in that, he says, is you find a lot more than what people truly desire than thinking you have to have what he accomplished. And that was basically, he was using himself as the contrast to that. When he said that, he was talking about his own success that left him completely unsatisfied.
Right.
And, you know, vanity, vanity. His refrain came from that experience that everything's vanity. And he was basically saying, no, take it from me. I've been there, done that.
Had everything.
Take everything that you have in your life. Be gracious. Show some gratitude and some appreciation for it. And make it work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see you're going to be a much happier person. I'm speaking for Solomon now.
Right.
Than myself. That's what he was actually saying in that book. You know?
Right. And I think that really is the key to it. And it doesn't always mean that you don't work to improve, right? It's not, okay, I'm not going to be greedy and I'll just accept whatever lot I have in life and stay there. It's more, you don't have to do it at the expense of everything around you, others, and in general, the society that we live in, that there's a moral aspect to it that says, I'm willing to let others have what they have because we have the opportunity, at least in this country, to be able to achieve.
And this is what, when we really learn something about ourselves, we are not, like Jesus pointed out, our lives do not consist of where we live, what we eat, what we wear. It really doesn't consist of that. And that's what he said almost clearly. Your life does not consist of these things. Whereas to an envious person, your life consists of those things and you're eating your heart out always because you think you don't have the best of those things. And you're convinced, though, you will be a happier person if you could somehow get into that circle or take somebody else's. But he said, your life, you're really not you. It's really not human. It's like bad food.
Right.
You know?
And
it doesn't really work.
And
makes you feel lousy.
Yeah, he points out the same thing that Solomon points out and makes it clear where the envy comes from. He says, what comes out of a person, out of Mark chapter 7, he says, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For it's from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. So it's what comes out of us. It's not what goes into us that really we need to clean the inside first. And I think that's the wisdom that Jesus is providing and what Solomon is talking about, that it's the peace that we have within ourselves, within what we have been given, that allows us not to rot from the inside out. So we're done for this week. We'll be back next week. Until then, keep thinking wisely.